League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
In Europe's top five leagues alone, The Guardian reported that 479 deals worth 811 million combined were completed in the January 2020 window, an increase from the reported 626 million of the previous year. On this second Squawker Talker transfer special brought to you by William Hill, the home of your odds, we're going to be analysing how the major leagues have been transformed by the winter window spending. Remember, all William Hill odds that are correct at the time of recording, and you must be 18 plus to bet. And for more information about responsible gambling, please visit begambleaware.org. But now it's time to introduce the guest that will be helping me pick apart the most prominent purchases of the window. Chief writer at Squawker, Mohammed Butt.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Yeah, good energy. For, I'm glad I hyped up that start.
I was up late watching the Super Bowl, and I also this morning realised that Ansu Fati wasn't born whenever came out, and I just feel really, really old.
That's derailed you.
Yeah.
Okay. So, old Mohammed Butt in the corner.
Old fan Mohammed.
Medium-aged chief editor at Squawker, Will Hall.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, yeah. And I've written down premium podcaster extraordinaire.
Ooh, your alliterative like P's have been all over the place.
I know, because
your
introduction. It's because I'm testing the pop on the microphone, because mine's got a little hole in it, so this will be the test if it really does work. Welcome, Ollie.
Hello.
And if anyone is listening for the first time, my name is Jake Entwistle. So let's begin. The Squawker Talker transfer special, the second part. We did a preview or mid-season review of the transfers, but now it's all done and dusted. As I mentioned, Europe's top five leagues, a lot of money was spent and a lot of deals were completed. A lot of them loans, which was an interesting new part of the window. But we're going to start with Premier League, what we know best. And the first section is discussing the most impactful signing of the window. Each of you are going to drop a little transfer, and we're going to discuss it in depth about how impactful they will be. And Ollie, as I said, you are the premium, now regular podcaster on the Squawker Talker. I want to go to you first. Who's the most impactful signing in the Premier League this January?
Well, it's got to be, after Sunday's results, Steven Bergwijn, the Manchester City tormentor at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. What an impact from the Dutchman.
Man City's worst nightmare.
Well,
he scores with every shot he takes against them. So,
yeah. And if we're talking about impact, he's handed Liverpool the title in his first 70 minutes as a Premier League player. So,
because they weren't already set to do it.
He's the kingmaker this season.
But yeah, no, what an impact. What a goal.
Yes.
And what a celebration as well. It was Tardelli levels, almost. With him rushing to the corner flag and getting bombarded by his new teammates, who are all very keen to use his new celebration. But yeah, it was a fantastic goal. Crucial time in the game as well, just after Zinchenko had been sent off, and City were rattled and still trying to readjust to that moment. And it was a brilliant goal. There was a bit of surprise that he started the game.
Yeah.
Considering he only joined on Wednesday. But it was obviously the right move for Mourinho, and It was quite funny. He spent basically the whole time just chasing shadows and running back towards his own goal rather than forwards. But
he made some good tackles though, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he played really well, and he cramped
token
up.
Token man
he?
Of the match.
Like, yeah, yeah.
That's because he's the new signing.
Yeah, massively. But he cramped up shortly after he scored, which showed how knackering his first Premier League game was, which is unsurprising given City had 70% of the ball. But yeah, great impact from him, and a very encouraging first outing for him in a Spurs shirt.
And started on the wing still. We didn't know if he was going to be He played there for PSV as a wide forward. You never know if Mourinho was going to try someone else as the centre forward. Has said that Son Heung-min isn't going to be this, isn't a striker. Lucas Moura is still playing there at the moment, the sort of unenviable task of trying to lead the Spurs line. Yeah. Do we think that Bergwijn, Son, Dele, and then plus one up top is now going to be the sort of fulcrum of Spurs' charge for what could be charge for Champions League football, top four race?
Yeah. Well, there are only 4 points off Chelsea now after Chelsea's draw with Leicester. Yeah, I think for the time being, definitely, depending on how Dele Alli's ankle is after that stamp from Sterling. But Mourinho's tended to play 4-2-3-1 since he came to Tottenham, and he seems to have settled on a double pivot now of Lo Celso and Winks, who are both excellent, I thought, against City. Probably Spurs' best players, along with Lloris.
And obviously Lo Celso was made permanent in the window.
Yeah,
so
exactly,
although him not being a new signing for the January window, that deal was locked in, and another $30 million spent by Spurs, because I don't think it was an obligation to buy. I'm not sure, but even
it was
then,
the option, yeah.
Yeah, it was just an option. So Spurs, he'd been impressive with Spurs, as we said, those Musa and Dembele impressions obviously made their mark on Jose Mourinho. And Spurs as well, with Gedson Fernandez joining.
Yeah.
So a few signings made, all of which were of a particular profile as well.
Yeah.
Which I'll let you say, as you've been getting quite sensitive about people using this observation.
Yeah, won't name any names. But yeah, I'm writing a piece on it actually as well, on how Spurs have sort of gone from being a pressing side under Pochettino in the first couple of seasons to a more possession-based team, which the possession stats sort of bear that out. In the first two Pochettino seasons, they averaged 55%. Possession, that shot up to 62%, and in Mourinho's 13 games in charge, that's way down to 48% possession, which basically shows that they're going from a pressing team to a possession team to a counter-attacking team, which is obviously a simplistic way of looking at it in terms of they will still be doing all of these things at certain times, but they are definitely more geared towards playing on the break, and the signing of Bergwijn obviously aids that quick player out wide, which Mourinho has tended to rely on quite heavily before. And as you mentioned as well, people like Gedson Fernandez, Ndombele, Lo Celso, all under the age of 23, all very dynamic players. Winks turned 24 on Sunday as well, so he has that sort of dynamism as well about him. So, yeah, Spurs are basically developing into a young counter-attacking side that can hit teams on the break, and they showed that at the weekend against City. I mean, yes, City should have blown them away in the first half and even the start of the second half, but they didn't take their chances. And I think even if Zinchenko hadn't been sent off, Spurs would have had counter-attacking opportunities the longer the game went on and City hadn't scored. But I think the fact that he did get sent off and suddenly City were reduced to 10 men did create a few spaces for Bergwijn and others to sort of burst into. But yeah, it's really encouraging that he started off that well.
And it was all because they didn't put Edison on the penalties that Hugo Lloris allowed to save another penalty against Man City. With William Hill now, Chelsea are still second favourites to secure one of the final two top four spots, because Leicester are obviously quite far ahead and almost not worth mentioning. Chelsea 4-9, Spurs now at 11-4 are the next after that. Interesting, just quickly talking about Chelsea, because obviously no signings to mention. They obviously made more signings during their transfer ban than they have since it had been lifted, and was probably because of that the most underwhelming window of the whole window, because
it started it talking about replacing Eden Hazard, and then ended it confirming Olivier Giroud is going to stay.
Yeah, Lampard's game of deal or no deal on deadline day was something that he enjoyed, and we saw often in the office when covering the whole thing. And Olivier Giroud, who was obviously linked for the move with Spurs, as I said, it's Lucas Moura playing up front for Spurs at the moment. Jose Mourinho seemed like he wanted to get that striker in, that didn't happen. Agallo chose another team. Olivier Giroud staying at Chelsea, but then wasn't included in the matchday squad in their 2-2 draw with Leicester. So Spurs, maybe, as I said, Chelsea's still favourites because they've got the lead, but Spurs look like to be the best placed team. Are there any other signings from any other clubs that suggest?
I mean, Bruno Fernandes is a big one, joining Old Trafford, he has. And I think he's obviously, and you saw against Wolves, right, how that he is actually the best player at that club, like or best midfielder at that club already, like, because it's just
fit midfielder
potentially. Well, yes. I mean, goodness of some Paul Pogba will finally show up, but 111 touches, which was the second most on the pitch, 88 passes, which was the most, 70 passes in the opposition half, which was the most, five shots, most, three on target, the most.
All outside the box.
All outside the box.
As we would expect.
To put a shift in, three tackles, which was fifth most, six recoveries, which was seventh most.
Dribbled past quite a few times. Though.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
no chances created.
He's not a defensive... No, he's not... Well, he's not...
You've got to look at both sides
of
it.
Yes, yes, that's very true. But watching him play was very interesting because obviously they've not had... Solskjaer's not been able to field anyone competent at number 10 all season, really. They've had bits and pieces from Juan Mata. Jesse Lingard is, you know...
Out of touch.
Out of touch, let's say it that way. And Andres Pereira is a championship player. So... It's just you look at them and they've had so many problems. And Bruno played there, and it was very interesting because Wolves, obviously, fantastic defensive outfit, right? Very good at closing off space, very good at defending in numbers, and they overwhelm you with they push you into areas and overwhelm you with numbers and stuff. He started off playing as a 10, was high up, wasn't getting too much joy because of Wolves playing well. He started noticing, I don't know if he noticed it or if Solskjaer told him or something, but you could see there was a gap appearing ahead of the Wolves' defence. When the ball would go wide for United, the Wolves would go over to crowd whoever had it, and then there would be a gap ahead of their defence, like a 10, 15, 20-yard gap. And so what he did was he started playing deeper, Pereira pushed up and started running wide, and he would just get involved in the middle of the box.
And just start shooting?
No, and let the ball move wide, and then there'd be this giant space there in front of him, and he'd be standing there going, pass me the ball. And no one would pass him the ball. And this happened like three or four times before finally a ball across accidentally sort of found its way to him and he had a shot and it stung. Paratricio made a save. It was right at him. But this is his first game, first 45 minutes we're talking about here, and he diagnosed a weakness in the Wolves team and put himself in position.
Giving him all the credit.
Well... It might have been Solskjaer. It might have been
the formation changed, didn't he? And he said in his interview,
"No. This was at halftime. I was in the first half alone. He had died and put himself in a position to take advantage of that with his favorite weapon of long range shooting. And United other players weren't stepping up. This is why I think in the race for the top four, as good as Bruno Fernandes is going to be, I think Bergwijn, as he gives Spurs another player like Son, pacey, direct, can score goals. I think that's going to maybe give him the edge. But because Bruno Fernandes, they needed more than just him." At Old Trafford. He was very good.
Well, they have someone arriving soon.
Odion Ighalo, yes.
He's in the Lowry as we speak.
The first Nigerian to represent the Red Devils.
I hope he does.
Is he going to be the most impactful? He hasn't scored with his last 28 shots in the Premier League.
You never know. This is the thing. You never know. With him when he was in the Premier League playing for Watford, you never knew. One that he could turn up and destroy someone and look absolutely unstoppable. Next day, he would just think, well, who is this guy? Why is he playing?
Well, it was almost season by season, wasn't it?
Yeah.
At first, most calendar goals in 2015, I think it was.
Yeah.
Championship plus Premier League. And then the second half dwindled out. But they needed someone in. It's almost the eye-watering wages that are reportedly being paid makes it glad that it's only a six-month deal no obligation to buy or whatever. But they needed some sort of striker.
Yeah, the way Martial has been playing lately, Solskjaer said he was tired. I don't think it's fatigue. Martial is one of those players that, a bit like Karim Benzema, when he's not on it, he just looks like useless. You're thinking, what is on it? When he's on it, he's unstoppable. So it's one of those things. He now provides, and you can now either hook Martial or put him wide or something and not have to put Mason Greenwood up front. Mason Greenwood is a very good finisher. Not much else at this stage of his career. He's only 18 years old. He'll develop into everything else. So Ighalo could be huge. He could be absolutely huge if he hits the ground running, if he starts performing straight away. We just don't know right now. Bruno Fernandes, we've seen, can be a huge improvement, but because they needed other areas of creativity. I mean, you can imagine when Marcus Rashford returns, Bruno Fernandes will get on very well with him because Rashford pulls so much attention towards him, it'll open up space for Bruno Fernandes. And as long as
one of them can shoot from outside the box at once.
Oh, they'll find a way to share them out, don't worry.
So that's sort of the big contenders. As I said, we on the mid-season transfer special, which you can go back and listen to, of course, we had a lot of Minamino chat there.
Yeah.
Not going to be impactful on Liverpool because they've won the league, as you mentioned, Ollie, thanks to Steven Bergwijn.
Yep.
Is somehow getting credit. Is somehow getting credit
for
that one.
And Heung-min Son. Let's give him some credit as well. And Ndombele. Nice pass.
It's probably the worst game I've ever seen Son play.
He wasn't good, but he just does it to City every time. It's like, oh, weakness in your defence. Yes, please.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing on King. Son, actually. And the Bergwijn thing is that Bergwijn went straight in on the left and Son went on the right, which isn't really Son's position. But obviously Mourinho thought, okay, Bergwijn's new to this league. Let's put him in his favourite position. Son has the pace to trouble Fernandinho, and that and Zinchenko in that sort of dodgy left-hand channel that City had. But Fernandinho pretty much nullified his
Yeah, Fernandinho was really good. And Son can cut onto either foot because he's gifted at shooting with both, whereas Bergwijn, I think, is more heavily right-footed. As you said, Bergwijn looks exciting even before the game against Man City. I think him and Ziyech were the only people in the Eredivisie during his time at the club that had like 100 shots, 100 chances created, 100 fouls won. So we know that his output is high in all parts of the attacking area. So I think a good shout. And as you said, part of that new sort of strand of Tottenham signings, younger and trying to rebuild a team again. Obviously, a lot of the Pochettino stuff was maybe that they'd all run out of a bit of fire and sort of enthusiasm. So bringing in these young players might propel that forward. But we've considered some of the people challenging, the teams challenging for top four spaces. Arsenal made some signings, but I don't think they're either going to be that impactful and they're not going to be challenging for the Champions League, so we'll skip over that despite two little stat nuggets on both of them just quickly. Mahrez the first,
so we're not skipping over it.
No, but I'm not giving any analysis, but just to give people value to listening, Mahrez the first left-footed centre-back signed for the first team since Vermaelen. He started quite well. And Cedric Suarez will be the third Portuguese player for Arsenal after Luis Boamorte, famously, and Amaury Bischoff, not so famously. So if you missed those during the deadline day coverage, there are some stat nuggets. But we'll move further down the table, which is where signings are key in the quest to save yourselves from relegation. And the main two, I would argue, were Aston Villa's acquisition of the first Tanzanian Premier League player and the first Tanzanian Premier League goal scorer already, Samatta. Mm. And obviously the fourth most expensive signing of the Premier League window, I think, Jarrod Bowen at West Ham. Mm.
So as well as being the first Tanzanian to score in the Premier League, Dean Smith also pointed out that Samatta's headed goal against Bournemouth in the 2-1 defeat to Bournemouth this weekend was the first headed goal they scored all season in the Premier League.
Instant impact.
Yeah, and he's a good few inches shorter than Wesley, so he's not, on the face of it, it doesn't look like he would provide the same amount of target man abilities of the guy he came in to replace, really. But Smith stressed that he's good in the air. And away from the fact that they need a consistent goal scorer to stay up, I think Ollie's made the point a couple of times that they need that that pressure release valve up front to just sort of, so they can get the ball up the pitch, get off the back foot, stop defending and just make it stick. Jack Grealish provides that in one sense by buying fouls, but if Samatta's as good in the air as Smith suggests, then that's another quality he can provide up front to Samatta when they're
his goal the against cross. His goal against Liverpool was an impressive header as well. The pictures of it are quite good. So obviously it's a...
Yeah, and I mean, it's a good way to demonstrate your aerial ability by beating the goalkeeper effectively in the duel. So he's done quite well there in the game. And yeah, I think it's a two-pronged question, really, talking about who's going to be the most influential signing, because you could make the best signing in the window, but if you're, say, in Liverpool's position, you're 22 points clear, there's very little influence to be had. So while I kind of agree that Bergwijn, given that point gap of, I think, 4 points, is it now, between Spurs and Chelsea, it has a real good shot of bringing about a big change to the Premier League season. There's also an opportunity that Aston Villa have. I think they're 1 point above the relegation spots now. So if Samatta does provide enough goals to like fire them out of trouble.
The thing is, if Samatta keeps Villa up as well, that's huge, because that means Grealish probably won't leave, which is massive.
I think Grealish is... I think you can't have...
You know, he's a local boy. He loves that club. I think if they stay in the Premier League, I think he'll stay.
I don't know. If you look at how close he came to going to Spurs... And I'm not fully buttoned up on how that transfer dynamic played out, but it did seem like the club were the ones who suddenly had the money to stop him from joining Spurs.
That was pre-takeover, though, wasn't it? So they were still under Dr. Tony at the time and in absolute freefall. So that would have made his decision easier to leave.
I'm in two minds as to whether he would. But
I mean, he's definitely
not,
too good to play for a relegation team. Like, that much is obvious. Like, he's a freewheeling genius. But... I think Samatta, could, I mean, just by keeping Villa up could be huge because they've got money as well.
Important to note that they did lose the game.
Yes.
Which he scored,
I was going to say,
not
quite the Bergwijn effect.
But yeah, they're not in the relegation spots by virtue of West Ham's result.
He does look more of a threat than Wesley, though, I think. Like Wesley, he got that goal against Burnley and you sort of thought, oh, maybe he'll go on a bit of a run now. But in general, he wasn't really in the right places to score for a lot of the season. Whereas Samatta should have scored against Leicester with that brilliant ball that Grealish put in, and he missed the ball completely, but he was in the right place at the right time. He looks more of a penalty box predator maybe than Wesley was, who was like a target man who Villa built off.
And just getting his first goal for the club, that's eradicating what could have been a huge hurdle psychologically speaking, because that would just be at the back of, like, the first goal is the most important for a player's career or a player's move at a new club, because if that's at the back of your mind, then
So that's out the way, but it hasn't reflected well in terms of the odds as well. Norwich, as we know, look like they're the ones guaranteed to go down. I think they made a couple of signings, but again, that would have to be a serious signing to save them from relegation, given how close the other teams are as well.
I said last week they're dead and buried, but I think they're like 7 points maybe away.
You know what?
But down that end of the table, like 7 points when you're in a top four battle is a lot, but it's slightly less when you're in a relegation battle, just by virtue of the fact that all the teams around you are going to be dropping so many points.
Yeah, you could turn that around in a hurry. I would say Liverpool should have loaned Van Dijk to Norwich for the rest of the season, just to make it interesting. See how far their title they won the title, so see how far they can go records wise without Van Dijk, and then not see if Van Dijk can
I think
Norwich
they would have liked him for the Champions League though.
Yeah. Oh god,
get his wages off the book.
Yeah. there's been a bit of a gap that's opened up. 14th is Crystal Palace on 30, then you drop down to Brighton 15th on 26, Bournemouth 26, Villa 25, West Ham 24, Watford 23, and Norwich 18. Norwich obviously favourites to go down, obviously. Then it's Aston Villa and then it's West Ham, the two clubs that we're discussing the most here. So Aston Villa and West Ham both signed that striker. We've spoken about Samatta's impact and how he's offering something different to Villa that Wesley was perhaps offering and being asked to offer. West Ham bought a really expensive striker in the summer window, Sebastian Haller, who scored again early. You're saying that scoring your first goal early to get it out of your mind is often a good thing, but
and Joe Linton scored really early against Spurs in August. Yeah, since
I didn't mean to shut that down, but I'm saying that now.
I still think it's true, but those are two really unfortunate examples to bring up.
I think it is true as well, but maybe he needs to get the second and third quite early as well.
When you're about 10 then that's when you can really like get that monkey off your back.
Well, Erling Haaland, who I think we're going to speak about, has shown what you really need to do and score 7 in 136 minutes. But Jarrod Bowen yet to make an appearance, so we don't know. His first 136 minutes could bring 7 goals.
Not likely.
Is that going to happen?
Maybe. He has got a good record. Got 38 goals in the Championship since the start of last season, which I think is more than any other player.
Yep.
There's only two players that have scored more than him this season. Mitrovic is one, and Ollie Watkins is the other one.
He was directly involved in the most Championship goals, 16 goals, 7 assists.
And actually 52 since the start of 2017-18, which was Hull's first season back in the Championship.
Always funny with the Championship stats, just quickly, is obviously because Pookie got 29 and then went, so he can't add to his tally when looking at sort of the previous season. So Bowen,
but we spoke about this off air. You need to use stats to manipulate your argument.
That's a trade secret. No, I used one that was this season as well, so it proves he is good. And at £23 million, that's quite a hefty investment.
I mean, we spoke on the pod last week about how Allaire at Frankfurt was a brilliant striker in the sense that he brought others into play, like Luka Jovic and Ante Rebic. And I think at West Ham, his issue has been that he hasn't had runners off him to sort of lay in and play off. Whereas Bowen has pretty much, he can play through the middle, but pretty much all of his appearances this season have come on the right wing, either in a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1. And he's quick and he's direct and he can latch on to balls laid off to him from Haller. So that could be another, a big factor for West Ham.
The reason I would argue for Samatta over Bowen, despite Bowen probably being the more exciting signing, is that I just don't think that Bowen addresses the major issue that West Ham have, because they scored. They scored 3 times against Brighton, and they did create some good chances against Liverpool. But in both matches, it's just defensive mistakes cost them the opener. It's the penalty that Diop gives, and the first goal against Brighton, where Fabianski punches the ball into, think Ogbonna's head.
Flappy Hansky returns.
So, which is, I mean, Fabianski's, I don't know if one of us made the comment on this pod last week, but has a case to be hailed as like potentially the best goalkeeper outside the top four spots. But that is not what you want to see after having just endured the mistakes made by Roberto this season so far. Just got rid of him and brought him in. But the second is also a failure to assume responsibility for a loose ball between Diop and Ogbonna, both of whom played in the 1-1 draw with Brighton earlier on the season. And I think it was Trossard who scored. But the way they scored was a long ball over the top that they both let bounce. And then Murray gets onto it, does a bit of hold-up play, the ball bounces and Trossard scores the equaliser. And then the third example is, West Ham are going to be annoyed at the VAR decision. As inconclusive as it is to really judge whether the ball does actually touch Murray's hand. But the fact remains, he's left completely all alone to pick up that ball and bury it in a really dangerous position. So it's three defensive errors. And Moyes even said after the game that he hopes that performance isn't defined by those defensive errors, given that it was generally a good display. Mm. But, I mean, they made three of them.
So, I mean, if you finish in the bottom three, exactly.
And Bowen Boyle counts, really exciting signing. But if West Ham go down this season, it's not because of like a lack of goals, I don't think.
Yeah, you just need to look at Man City to see that, even if you have a very, very nice attack, if your defence isn't at least stable, then you're not going to get anywhere. Like, Man City's defence has been so erratic this season. West Ham is the same. And, they didn't sign any full-backs, they didn't sign any centre-backs, and that was their biggest need, even ahead of a striker. I mean, they needed a striker too, but to not address your massive need, like right back especially, is just incredible that they didn't do that. Because unless Frederick suddenly becomes, Joe DiMaggio part reincarnated, which is not likely given his history.
Was he a good fullback then?
Mr. Iron Man played like I don't know how many games in a row for the Yankees. Unless he becomes like the Iron Man like that, there's no way that they're going to struggle at right back, and they're going to struggle at centre back as a result of struggling at right back. And then Fabianski, is a great shot stopper, not necessarily great at the other parts of goalkeeping. So it's
the point was made that he might have been fouled in that.
Yeah,
in that
no,
incident,
it's not. He's not. I'm not saying he's Chesney, Arsenal era Chesney. Anyway, I mean, the man's about to win Serie A again.
But he's Arsenal era Fabianski. The joke I made was that Fabianski making mistakes is probably what stopped him from being Arsenal's number one goalkeeper. So it's not, and this isn't dumping on him. It's just sort of like, he's a goalkeeper that has been seen to make mistakes before. So
I do think as well, Moyes has to take a big share of blame for that result, in that at 3-1 up, West Ham took off Antonio. Yeah. We were talking a minute ago about pressure valves up front, Samatta and Grealish and stuff. Antonio is that out ball for West Ham because he's just so quick and direct and he can hold the ball up. And he just having him on the pitch just scares defenders because he's so unpredictable. And as soon as they took him off, the momentum just switched to Brighton. And Brighton could have won it in the end. Mm. And considering West Ham have got Liverpool and Man City away in the next two, that was a massive 3 points, two points dropped. But it was a real must win, that game.
West Ham could be in big trouble. Their next run of games coming up is not horrible. Good. And so they may not in massive trouble now, but they could be in big trouble in a month's time.
Their next four away games are City, Liverpool, Arsenal, Spurs.
Sometimes those big games bring out the best in teams. And West Ham at the moment don't really have what you'd call a traditional home advantage.
Yeah, but
given
it's
the
Liverpool
there.
So Moyes, they're not beating Liverpool because of Moyes.
Yeah, it's Liverpool, but it's also Man City and Arsenal with one of them.
Arsenal maybe there's a chance just because Arsenal. But I mean, even Arsenal, I think they're getting some sort of, I don't know.
I was going to say stop that train of thought there. the performance against Burnley was sort of square.
Didn't concede though.
Yeah, we did that against Everton
despite
Everton
Jay Rodriguez's best attempt.
An absolute sitter. So we didn't even need Mary and Cedric, because look at the defensive record Arsenal have now. But I digress. West Ham, then, based on those fixtures, might soon move to second favourites. They're 6-5 at the moment to be relegated. Aston Villa 4-5, and Norwich, as I said, 1-12 on William Hill. But we haven't talked about the actual most impactful signing yet, who could lead a charge for a team that was expected to be in the relegation battle, and is now in the actual charge for Champions League spots, the Norwegian midfield master, the club record signing for Sheffield United, Sander Berger, which I think is the correct pronunciation.
Are you going to do the song?
No, I bottled it because I was going to sing it, but I'm not a very good singer.
The best thing about this weekend was the amount of new signings that actually started their games. Yeah, usually the first game week after the transfer window is quite anticlimactic in that players are phased in gradually. But he had quite a few managers who just went...
Well, you know what?
You know.
Yeah. Well, Chris Wilder said he looks like a Sheffield United player. He's athletic, he gets about the park, and he can pass it. 5 out of 5 tackles, which was the most on the pitch, and no one dribbled past him.
And he came off on 70 minutes, didn't he?
Exactly. He didn't play the whole game. I think, again, Chris Wilder said in that sort of post-match interview, he saw on the look of his face that it would be a bit like, oh, I've got a bit of work to do to get up to speed, which he enjoyed. And again, I think people talk a lot about signings and just impure ability and we need this, we need that. But then there's also that personality fit, which is something that Liverpool always praise with as well, is they're not just signing players to fill a hole. It's you have to almost pass a test that you're going to add to the squad and fit in the squad dynamic. Based on what we saw from the first game, the songs that are being sung about him, how he's being received by the crowd. In terms of impactful signing, maybe, as we said, relegation is more important in terms of what gives a club, but if Sheffield United can make a push for a top six place, then I don't think you can argue that.
When you look back at the stories of the season, you're not going to talk about how Villa avoided relegation ahead of how Sheffield United qualified for European competition. But, so in that sense, it's definitely got a point.
Definitely would.
I think Sheffield United's business this winter has actually been really impressive. They signed 3 players. They signed obviously Sander Berg, who we spoke about, Richarlison Zivkovic as well, came in to add a bit of depth up front, and then Panos Retsos at the back as well. Yeah. But I think just the profile
and
of those,
Jack Rodwell.
I mean, coming from, that goes against my point.
Okay.
So, yeah, Berg coming in from a Champions League club, Retsos coming in from Leverkusen as well. In the summer, Sheffield United were pretty much just buying players from the Championship. And I think it just shows that the fact that they're in contention for European place shows that they're now a really attractive proposition. Mm-hmm. That they can sort of attract these players. And yeah, he looks a great signing.
Yeah, and obviously someone that has been linked to many clubs before. There was obviously the deadline day sort of blunders of, was he actually going to a different club and turning up at Carrington? But he's gone to Sheffield United.
Yeah, I think Genk said that Napoli were interested in Liverpool, whether that's them trying to sort of stir up a bit of
he's a player that had attracted that interest. I think they'd said that before, but he suffered quite a big injury and no one knew if that was going to sort of derail that career trajectory that was expected. But Sheffield United going to a Premier League club that isn't how you would have first considered Sheffield United, they're all of a sudden, as you said, attractive proposition. And I was sort of joking about the stuff that I've enjoyed the sort of way he's been received, but immediately went into the team, as we said, John Lundstrom's reign as FPL king may be over because of it. So it might be
there's
impactful.
There's a bit of a contract standoff there as well with him and Chris Wilder.
Oh, okay. Does he think those fantasy points?
Yeah. It's gone to his head.
He wants to be paid in fantasy points. Yeah.
So that's why it's also impactful, because it's going to ruin everyone else's fantasy Premier League
teams.
I've
already got rid of him, yeah.
Exactly. So we go beyond the Premier League table on the Scorker Talk podcast. So we've talked about the most impactful players joining the Premier League, but we usually save our bit of fun for the end of the podcast. We're going to sandwich it in the middle, because I just wanted to get a quick little soundbite from everyone on the player they're going to miss the most that departed in the winter window. And I'm going to start with you, Mo, because we knew who you were going to pick even before this was a section.
Argentina,
where you've been going.
Argentina. The one and only magical Marcos Rojo. I mean, the man.
You think he was like 40 goal a season from left back, the way Mo talks about him.
The man whose name is literally Mark Red. It's, what can you say about him?
He's hopefully a lot, because we've got a podcast segment on it.
He's sensational. He's like. Since he joined, in terms of talent, in terms of being a defensive talent, he's been equal of anyone, well, except for maybe Maguire, at the club. His problem is that obviously he's prone to errors, right? He makes mistakes, does stupid stuff. But if you look at his competition at the club, they literally all do stupid stuff. It's been really weird that he was never given a prominence in the defensive unit, because he's left-footed, so he balances out the defensive unit anyway. And he's got more athleticism and dynamism than anyone else at the club, really, in terms of the back line, except Eric Bailly, who has other problems.
But Rojo's problem was Rojo played quite frequently, and then
He's got like since 2016-17, he's had like about 2,000-ish minutes. He's not really played that often.
Knee injury is what I mean. Is that the injury? The prominence was before, and then he's faded out because, unlike Zlatan Ibrahimovic being able to magic some new ligaments at the click of a finger.
No one is Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Exactly.
The funny thing is, of course, since 16-17, with a minimum of 1,000 minutes, he's had 7.25 clearances per 90 minutes, which is the most of any player. Like, he's so good at very specific things.
Rabonas.
Yeah, and this is what I was getting to. And, you know, he's
sent off somehow.
Exactly. He's got that Casemiro Teflon Don thing. He can just pile into someone, like you're thinking that's a yellow card, and he just sort of walks away going, smiling. Mm. No one books him. He's completely, utterly committed to the cause, which you always love from a defender. Like, he really just will put his body on the line to stop anything going in. Physically capable, technically skilled as well. He switches off sometimes mentally, but whatever.
That doesn't matter when you can Rabona it.
It doesn't matter. And then he adds so much spice to the occasion, man. I mean, he signed for United off the back of. I think they signed him because of that Rabona at the World Cup where he cleared it from his own.
I would have signed
with
him
a Rabona. I mean, that's just the greatest thing I've ever seen. And he's done a couple of them at United as well, just of Rabonas. But the best thing is how he can face up against like elite strikers and really give them, you know, a match like Diego Costa in under Mourinho, I think he did it. And then obviously there was a famous, his first Manchester derby was playing Aguero, had him in his pocket, he went off injured and Aguero scored like 5 minutes later. So it's like, and obviously he's not the best, objectively the best defender. He makes mistakes, he's not very tall,
can I just ask would your feelings on Rocco be different if he was a regularly starting member of Man United's defence?
No, because he's just great. He's just absolutely, he's the kind of player you think he's got flaws, but he gives it his all, man. And he plays with such gusto.
You sound like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
You can't help but, hey, that's both a compliment and an insult. Yeah. So, thank you. I just think Rojo's great, and he's got the kind of personality that United always talk about, how we want winners, we want leaders. Mm. Maguire looks like, you know, if you told him, I just punched your brother in the face, he'd be like, oh, well, all right, whatever. Whereas if you said to Rojo, I just said your brother smells, he'd probably just stop beating you up. He'd always attack you. You want that kind of fighter mentality in a defender, man.
We need to wind this
up. We don't condone.
I'm not condoning anything. I'm not saying violence is never the answer, kid.
You're saying that you like it.
But you're saying it's a desirable trait.
In a centre-back, yes. I mean, you look at all the greatest centre-backs of all time, you wouldn't want to mess with them. There's not a centre-back that you think, oh, yeah.
So you're saying Rojo's one of the best centre-backs of all time?
Absolutely not saying that, but he's just got the quality.
I thought you were going to double down. Okay, so Mo's definitely going to miss Rojo, and he only went on loan, so he could be back. Ollie?
Yeah, I'm not going to miss him for the last 6 months. I think you'll miss him in time. But okay. Right now, it's kind of like meh. But Christian Eriksen, the first 6 years of Christian Eriksen rather than the last 6 months. I just think, like, I mean, a lot of people always bandy around, oh, he's underrated or whatever. I think Eriksen's underappreciated for what he did in the Premier League. For Spurs, he was arguably, well, definitely one of the key parts of Spurs' rise under Pochettino. They will find it hard to replace him. Obviously, the first game of the post-Eriksen era, they managed to beat Man City.
Didn't need to create any chances.
Yeah. In no small part to Lo Celso and Winks, as we touched upon. Mm. But he was great for Spurs. I mean, if you look at stats wise, he's 18th in the Premier League for assists with 62, level with Nobby Solano, which is quite nice.
He's elite company.
The trumpet player. And he's got more assists than Eden Hazard, Mesut Ozil and Juan Mata, who I would count as his sort of contemporaries over the past 7 years, really. They've been there the whole time and been the sort of chief playmakers for their team, and he's got more assists than those.
Yeah, I mean,
shows...
I wrote an article about, like, he's top of, like, almost every, like, creative metric that there is, like, I mean, for his time in the Premier League.
De Bruyne is sort of rewriting it, but, he had more chances created than anyone else in that time. And I think as well, I mean, everyone knows about his qualities going forward, but I think his durability and versatility as well are sort of underplayed a little bit. I did a tweet after he left which said that of the 190 Premier League games that Pochettino's first five seasons, he played 181 games, which for an attacking player is just absurd, and it just shows how reliant Spurs were on him, but also how durable he was. You know, he was never injured, always played. And he always ranked really high as well for kilometres ran as well, which you wouldn't necessarily expect. And in terms of versatility as well, he was brought as like a pure number 10.
Cost only like 7 million.
I think, which is nothing.
Even at the time.
Really yeah, cheap. A third of Eric Lamella. He was the most expensive one. But yeah, no, he was signed as like a pure 10, but he played a lot of his football as a sort of inside floating playmaker off the left wing. Played on the right when Spurs played 3-4-2-1 in the Conte season where everyone started playing back three. And then last season played very deep in central midfield as well. So he's moved around a lot more than I think people really notice. And yeah, he provided some big, big moments as well. Last season, well, two of his biggest moments in the Spurs shirt, he scored that goal against Inter, ironically, considering he now plays for them, which basically meant the Spurs qualified for the last 16. And then he scored a goal against Brighton as well, which basically secured their top four place. So he had a lot of big moments in the Spurs shirt, and I think his time at the end has sort of muddied things a little bit. But I think in time he will be appreciated.
Yeah, yeah. Start to miss him.
The cross to Delhi to kill Chelsea's unbeaten run.
Those two assists.
Yeah.
But farewell, Christian Eriksen. We'll miss your corners hitting the first man. Will, have you got a set piece master that you're going to miss?
Kind of, actually. This guy was somewhat known. Well, he took set pieces occasionally. full disclosure, we decided on this question with Eriksen in mind, and then checking the done deals list.
You didn't seem to give quite that full disclosure at all.
I didn't need to check the list. I knew from my heart.
but right, okay. Well, I've gone for Ki Sung Young, who played for Sunderland. Played for Swansea, came to the Premier League with Swansea, represented Sunderland, just been released by Newcastle United on loan. And I've got a soft spot for him because there's people who work regularly with Optus Stats. You spend a lot of time checking rankings by metrics. And when certain unfamiliar players like keep cropping up at the top of the list, you think to like look out for them when you're watching games. And Key is a good example of someone who just routinely figured really close to the top for like passing accuracy. He always had like that 90%+ pass accuracy. Had like Moussa Dembele-esque rates of dribble success as well.
Success, but probably not the volume.
There was a decent enough volume as well, let's check this guy out. And then he kind of delivers because when you watch him, he is a really elegant and composed player on the ball. And that kind of completes this strange process by which we develop a fondness for certain players. He didn't make much of an impact at Newcastle, which is doubly disappointing in view of the fact that given he was signed by Rafa Benitez, I saw an article suggesting that Key could be his new Xavi Alonso.
I was hoping that wasn't going to come then, because I've never seen it.
But the eye test, it kind of stands up to an extent because he's this player who's like really good at shielding the ball, but he'll also ping it long range as well.
Really Mo Rojo thing was bad.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. Like, we should be free to make these comparisons between players, stylistically speaking, without having to speak to their actual ability and the career that they had. And he definitely, I saw some traces of having watched both of them quite a fair bit. Then it's not completely ridiculous.
Xavi's going to be a great manager, by the way. I prefer nothing else.
Yeah, and so in someone who keeps the ball well, dribbles, pings these long-range balls. Didn't do a lot of Newcastle, but he assisted the season that he signed, I think it was 2018 he joined. He assisted the Ayoze Perez goal that won them their first game that season, because if you remember, they went like 10 or so games without picking up a win in the Premier League. Ultimately, saw the season out quite comfortably. But he contributed at that moment. Won't be remembered for much. But the reaction from Newcastle fans to this I've seen isn't been like, oh yeah, good riddance to him. It's been like, oh, it's a shame he never worked out. And his message upon leaving made it all seem quite amicable. Mm. Another couple of things just quickly on him. Yeah. He was Swansea's record signing for a time and actually joined, I think, in the same window as Michu.
Yeah.
And he was part of the Swansea side that won the League Cup under Michael Laudrup. Actually played in central defence. In that game.
Well, there you go. Farewell, Key.
Which never gets remembered, that Swansea League Cup one.
Everyone loves Michu whenever we tweet about it.
They beat Bradford.
My pick doesn't deserve any serious amount of time because you all took the good ones. I'm not going to miss him because he's not been here that long, but I just thought that Angelino's being loaned out from Man City again, signed in 2013, could only join in 2014, loaned out, sold, re-signed, now loaned back out to RB Leipzig, which is actually sort of, credible is the wrong word because the other loans were good. He was excellent at PSV. But I mean, he's not just been loaned out for the sake of it. RB Leipzig in the Champions League last 16. So I'm not going to miss him because he didn't really play much. But I just thought that it was sad to not see him after all that career path building up to making some appearances for Man City, who don't have a nominal left back. And the left back they played against Spurs decided to get himself sent off. Maybe they should have kept hold of poor old Angelino. ...1,113 players have played at least 90 minutes of football in one of Europe's top five leagues this season. Erling Braut Haaland, who was signed for a meagre £19 million, has played 137 minutes for Borussia Dortmund in the German Bundesliga and scored more goals than 2,047 of those players. Seven goals in 136 minutes in the top 100 already for Europe's top five leagues. Three appearances, one start. This section is going to be about the most interesting transfers, the most exciting transfers from outside the Premier League. And I wanted to start with Haaland because someone that took the Champions League by storm with Salzburg scoring eight goals in six games, is doing exactly the same after having a whole host of clubs chasing after his signature in January. And it's not only the fact that he has joined Borussia Dortmund. It was the price, as I mentioned there, £19 million for a 19-year-old. Obviously, I think release clauses were involved in that. Salzburg, relative financially, don't have to sell massively above because £20 million for them, I imagine, is hefty. They also sold Minamino, so they've made £30 million in one window from that really positive Champions League group stage campaign. Seven shots on target, seven goals, eight shots in total. Quite a magnificent signing already. And given the fact that Champions League changed their rules a couple of seasons ago, in which that you were no longer going to be cup tied when you swapped teams, if only they did that when Aubameyang joined Arsenal.
Oh, mate, duck and cover PSG is basically what you have to say here.
Yeah.
Dortmund's team is a perfectly engineered and put together side by Zorc to create chances. They're magnificent at it. They're so fluid and so smooth. Jadon Sancho has just taken their game on leaps and bounds. He gels so with Marco Reus. All they need is a consistent goal scorer. I mean, I know Sancho has chipped in and scored a lot.
Jadon Sancho is their top scorer and top assist provider this season.
So if you pair him with a consistent striker, you can see when Paco Alcácer, whenever he played for them, smashed it. If you put a consistent goal scorer up front, they will score. And you just see him with Haaland. This is why he chose them over other clubs, right? There were other clubs linked, bigger clubs. He would have earned a lot more money, whatever. But for whatever reason, he's picked Dortmund, and I think that's by far the best thing he could have done. Because this is the ideal club for young players to develop. We've seen that with countless examples. Mm. And the Bundesliga is not an easy league, but it's the kind of league that plays to Haaland's strengths. A lot of break, a lot of counter-attacking, a lot of transition football, a lot of space. And Dortmund play exactly to his strengths. And I mean, he's just perfect. They needed a consistent goal scorer, a consistent striker. He's there. He's going to score avalanches of goals, man. Mm. Like, even if he's only there for a season and a half, which is probably the minimum term you could say before Mino Raiola tries to move him on. I mean, hopefully he's there longer, develops a bit more. But let's just say it's only a year and a half. He could easily score 50 goals in that time. Easily, like maybe even more.
Yeah, Timo Werner, who's obviously constantly linked to maybe sort of the next big Bundesliga sale, is sort of king of fast break goals in that RB Leipzig team. But now with Dortmund there and Haaland's goals that he's scored already are sort of You can't have the red. What's the yellow and black equivalent of red arrows? It's the bees swarming forward. I'll probably edit that bit out.
Oh, the bees, not the bees.
And I've actually been looking at their football a lot more closely recently because I want to focus on them as a sort of Champions League underdog, given the fact that they're so strong in transition now. Mm. And Haaland is so important because his laboratory-made athleticism means he can keep up with their high-flying wide players, arrives late in the box, and all of his goals are pretty much inside the six-yard box because his speed of movements for someone that is a giant of a man is quite striking. And they've got one of the most athletic wing-backs in Europe, I think, in Achraf Hakimi, who is their actual top scorer in the Champions League this season with 4 goals. Jadon Sancho, as I said, was the first player to provide 10 goals and score 10 in Europe's top 5 leagues this season. Marco Reus has really flourished in the last 2 seasons, finally consistently healthy, has reached 10 goals already this season.
They put legs around him. That's the thing. That's the thing with old playmakers. You put legs around him, and Dortmund put legs around him, and he's just, like you say, he's thriving.
And then they signed Thorgan Hazard as well, who's, given the fact his brother's been injured, is actually outperforming him by quite a distance this season. Dortmund putting together one of the most exciting front lines. As I said, Rafael Guerrero at left wing back, Hakimi at right wing back. Not the most defensively minded players. Lucien Favre sort of settling with this 3-4-3. I think it changed to a 4-2-3-1 for Haaland's first game, potentially because they want to get all of the players in. Or unless I've inverted it and they still went with 3-4-3, but a few Dortmund fans are suggesting that a 4-2-3-1 might be able to have Royce, Hazard, Sancho, Haaland all in the same team. Yeah.
I think in the Bayern Munich defeat, they were using that around about that period of the season.
They brought Hummels back as well.
Yes.
In defense,
so. Oh, exactly. And he's been there from obviously the start of the summer as well. And we've seen glimpses of his long passing as well that's quite famous with Germany and in the Bundesliga. An assist for Royce recently that was just centre back to centre forward, one goal. And when Haaland starts playing up front for them as well, those balls are going to be on. So they're becoming a multifunctional threat just from one signing in this striker that replaces Paco Alcacer's incredible goal-scoring rate, because goals per minute in the Bundesliga since 2018-19, Alcacer was top of anyone that had played 90 minutes. Obviously replaced quickly by Erling Haaland, who is averaging one every 10 minutes, essentially.
Another thing with Haaland is, like, over the past 10 years, Lewandowski has been the goal-scoring machine of the Bundesliga. He scored 20-plus goals in 8 of his 10 seasons now. But in his first season at Dortmund, he was 22, and he managed 8 in 33 games, and Haaland's got 7 in 3.
So, well, there you go.
So that sort of shows how ridiculous his start has been.
Yeah. First Dortmund player to score, or the second Dortmund player to score a hat-trick on debut since Aubameyang, and only the second player to do so, the first since Aubameyang for Borussia Dortmund. So, yeah. We were talking about getting your first goal, and I referenced Haaland earlier. Absolute dream start, and sets him up perfectly to actually contest Lewandowski for Champions League Golden Boot, because that was something we mentioned as well. Is depending on where Haaland goes, he'll actually be able to continue that streak. He's got 8 in the Champions League. Lewandowski, I think, is on 10. So he's only 2 goals away, and given how Dortmund are playing, scoring loads and loads of goals, since he joined in 3 games, they've scored 14. He's scored 15, he scored 7 of them. Jadon Sancho has scored and assisted in all 3 games. As an attacking force now, yes, you could argue about, as Mo mentioned, how Bundesliga sides genuinely defend and play against each other. You break, we break, suits them perfectly. But I always think that teams in transition are best suited to winning Champions League ties based on how sort of cagey it may be.
And they'll be playing against an old Bundesliga manager in Thomas Tuchel at PSG. So
that game on the pitch, you're going to have PSG's 4-2-4 and Dortmund's 3-4-3, which is essentially a 3-2-5. And Julian Brandt plays in centre midfield for Dortmund.
Neymar, Mbappe, Haaland, Sancho, Di Maria, Mauro Icardi is probably the least interesting of the lot, and he's Mauro Icardi, so that's
it's going to be. I hope it's like 10-all. I think they both. I think they both have the record for group stage goals as well. PSG and Liverpool. Or Liverpool broke it one season. Anyway, basically, there's so many goals guaranteed. But they haven't just signed a striker as well. Their deadline day signing was Emre Can, which is, we don't know if it's an option or obligation to buy for €30 million.
I read it's an obligation.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if you've seen conflicting stuff elsewhere, it might still be up in the air.
Yeah. But essentially, it's a loan initially. So as we mentioned right at the top of the podcast, this new trend to just getting those loans in and then sorting out the fees later because they're not going to play anyway. But Emre Can, for all of the sort of jokes, to put them bluntly, about sort of leaving Liverpool because he wanted to win in Champions League and then Liverpool win in Champions League, is still only 26 years old and is an extremely versatile player. So I might actually be...
The optics on this one make it sound seem like it's a step down almost. It kind of takes the gloss of the signing from Dortmund's perspective because the nature of the departure looks harsh. Juventus have basically made £25 million off a free signing who they left out of this season's Champions League squad. And essentially his reaction to being left out of the Champions League squad is what sealed his fate, what ensured they would actively look to sell him during this window and probably why he was actively looking to go. He didn't like set the world on fire in his first season with Juventus, which was last season, but he did start 20 games. So it's not as if there's an asterisk next to the title win on his CV in the same way that, because he did win the Bundesliga technically with Bayern, made about four appearances. I don't know how it works in terms of whether you get a medal over there. And it looks like he's been jettisoned. He's a cast off, and Juventus's sporting director more or less said that he didn't have the characteristics for this style of play. But I don't think there's much shame in not having the characteristics as a midfielder for a manager like Maurizio Sarri, who has hyper-specific tastes when it comes to wanting these really specialist midfielders. You need to be either the ground jewel specialist like Allen or Kante, perhaps.
Which I would have thought, just quickly, I would have thought Emre Can would have been quite well-suited to, based on some numbers.
So I don't think he's quite that.
Yeah.
He's generally like, if you read around about how he's generally regarded, it's his versatility that stands out as his most unique trait. And that's usually code language for he doesn't have an area in which he particularly shines. And that's also reflected in the fact of where Dortmund will probably end up using him, because he's basically going over to, he's inheriting the status left behind by Julian Weigl as someone who was used in the central defensive positions, also used in defensive midfield. These are two positions that Can complain, but Weigl was never really nailed on first choice starter in either. The situation with Weigl was such that he asked to leave the minute the January transfer window opened. So Can going into that is a step up from just being completely frozen out the side, but he's going to have to work to earn a place in the side in view of going to the Euros this summer. There's a role for him potentially on the right side of that back three that I think Piszczek is playing in at the moment. Or there's the role next to Witsel in midfield, but by all accounts it seems that Brandt is doing quite well there, linking play between the two things. I think that's the perspective you need to put this transfer deal in. He's come in for Weigl. He's come in as a defensive reinforcement for a team like Dortmund that are creative and they're scoring a lot of goals at the moment. They're cutting down the lead on Bayern. I think at the start of this month it was like 7 points, now 3 points. But they're also shipping more goals than they'd perhaps like anyway. And they've been without Delaney as well, the most defensive option they have.
I think that's what forced that 3-4-3, is because Brandt was obviously being used in the 4-2-3-1. It's like, well, we've run out of midfielders, let's try him here. And it's working well, as you said, scoring lots of goals. Bayern Munich retook the lead at the top of the Bundesliga, of course, in the latest weekend of football. And they're obviously favourites to win the title. Leipzig, who I mentioned briefly with Angelino going there, they signed Dani Olmo, who is only rivaled by Messi in terms of dribbles in European competition since the start of last season. 3-1 favourites. Dortmund 4-1. And then you have Gladbach, Leverkusen, Schalke. Still all quite close by, but not with perhaps the pedigree to mount a serious challenge. But there's one Bundesliga team as well that is just as interesting as Dortmund are interesting in terms of scoring goals. Hertha Berlin signed, who I once dubbed the most marketable striker in Europe, after his incredible form last year. Christoph Piontek made the switch to the Bundesliga, given the number 7 shirt after he worked so hard to earn the number 9 shirt at AC Milan. He only had it for 6 months, despite finishing top scorer for all 3 teams he represented in 2018-19. But he signed for $23 million for 13th place Hertha Berlin. And I thought it was worthwhile in explaining how on earth that came about. One, due to the money, and two, that he's not the only signing that Hertha Berlin made in January.
Yeah, no, I have to admit, this Hertha Berlin investment completely bypassed me in the summer. But yeah, a German businessman, Lars Windhorst, came in last summer and pumped money into Hertha. He's got a 37.5% stake in the club, which he paid 125 million euros for. And it's expected that there is an option in that deal for that to go up to 49.9%, which you may think is a strange figure, but basically in the Bundesliga there's the 50+1 rule, which basically means that you can't have an Abramovich style takeover in the Bundesliga, because 51% of the club will be owned by the club, and therefore as well by extension the fans as well. But even so, he's obviously pumping money into it. And yeah, I mean, the first I sort of realised of Hertha having any money was, I think, right at the start of the window, when there was a lot of speculation about Granit Xhaka leaving Arsenal after the whole Crystal Palace saga and all that. And I kind of heard of that rumour and was like, how are Hertha Berlin going to afford a top six Premier League club's former captain?
Top six midfielder.
Top six midfielder who was captain.
In the world.
I mean, they're not really linked with those sort of players before. They weren't anyway. Mm. So that kind of got me guessing as to, where's this money coming from? But yeah, as you said, they signed Piontek. They also signed Lucas Toussaint from Lyon as well, which is quite a coup for them. And also Mateus Cunha as well from Leipzig.
The Toussaint one is hilarious.
Because yeah, he's gone back on loan, yeah, hasn't he?
And I think that nothing indicates more than the sort of new money than spending it and not necessarily using it straight away.
Yeah.
We can buy someone for 20 million. Let's get him. Oh, can we have him back though? Yeah, yeah. But we just want to get a 20 million signing through the window is how it sort of, that's really sort of basic analysis of it. But it struck me as someone that had money to burn in the sense that they were trying to acquire their squad.
But I think the positive thing from Hertha's point of view is you mentioned earlier that they're 13th in the Bundesliga. They've actually had quite a big bounce since Jürgen Klinsmann came in, which we'll talk about in a sec. But the fact that they're signing players from Milan, Lyon and Leipzig, these are all big clubs that are, you know, well, historically big clubs, or are doing very well at the moment. Whereas in the summer, when they first got this investment, they were signing players from sort of smaller clubs, not necessarily Celtic because they got Boyata from him, but like, do you know what I mean? Like
clubs
that aren't as affluent as the ones they've got players from now. Mm. So yeah, it is very interesting. I mean,
it can. The thing is that if you're looking at a comparative club in the Premier League that's recently come under new ownership and has started spending a bit more than they previously would have done, then you look at Everton, and they haven't done so well signing cast-offs from the bigger clubs. Yeah. So although you could say that's represents a rise in status, being able to attract these players, on the other hand, it might then be better to sign the versions of those players a couple of years ago.
I think they have got good players, though, as well. I mean, Everton have signed good players as well, but all of Hertha's signings are under 23. It's very much they've copied the Bundesliga, the sort of Bundesliga template of signing young players and hoping they develop as expected.
Yeah, essentially every player we mentioned for that Dortmund team, another reason why they're so exciting to double down on it is that Haaland and Sancho are 19 years old.
Yeah.
Thorgan Hazard's 24. It's crazy. Hakimi's 21, might be going back to Real Madrid.
That's just a testament to the team building that's gone into that.
I mean, Piontek is a big signing for them. He's linked with a lot of big clubs in the window, basically half the Premier League, and he's ended up at Hertha Berlin. So that sort of shows their ambition. And I mean, they're not so much a sleeping giant in that they've never, ever won anything. I think I was looking at their Wikipedia and they've won 2 top flight titles. And I think they're in 1930 and 1931. So, and they've never won the German Cup. And their best run in Europe was a semi-final appearance in the UEFA Cup in 1979. So this isn't a club that has any sort of track record of success. But they've got 75,000 capacity stadium. They're in the capital city of Germany. Like, there's huge untapped potential there, and you can see why an investor's gone in and thought, hang on, we can sort of do something here. If teams like Leipzig, who are based in the middle of nowhere, are suddenly competing in the Champions League and for the Bundesliga, then why not Hertha Berlin? So it is interesting. I mean, they're not quite out of relegation trouble, but I don't think they'll be in any sort of danger.
But even so, even if we don't know how this is going to go, I think they're so interesting to point out because they made three of the top six most expensive signings of the January window in the Bundesliga. They're 13th placed, as you said. The stuff about their stadium is crazy. So whichever way it goes, we didn't pick them out because we think, oh, Hertha Berlin are going to win the Bundesliga. It was sort of picked out to be, try and see what happens to this Hertha Berlin side, because the amount of players they've bought in, the money spent, should mean that there's some sort of interesting story unfolds. Mo, we've all spoken about a couple of signings there. Is there anyone that you wanted to quickly touch on?
I mean, yeah, Paco Alcácer. We were saying he left Dortmund. He left, obviously, Dortmund to join Villarreal this summer. He made his debut, already scored a goal. You know, he's a weird one because he was at Valencia. He was a very orthodox sort of player there. Looked promising, looked good, scored goals, got into the Spain team, had a really, really amazing run of like scoring goals every time he played for Spain. Got to move to Barcelona, everyone's thinking, okay, here we go. And he didn't work at Barcelona because he was an orthodox kind of striker, runs in behind, scores goals, works hard defensively to play, trying to fill Luis Suarez's boots. And Suarez plays the striker position so uniquely. It didn't work. He looked okay when he played, but he didn't look great and ended up leaving, went to Dortmund. And at Dortmund, he's just been absolutely incredible. He played 37 games for about 1,729 minutes, right? 55 shots, 23 goals. That's a 41.82% conversion rate, which is nuts. It's the second highest in the Bundesliga in that time that he was there. The goals are 1.2 goals per 90 minutes, which is the highest in the Bundesliga since the start of 16-17. So higher than Lewandowski, higher than Aubameyang. You know, he's got...
Yeah, but you've punished the players that have been there back too far.
Yeah, but this is the point, though, is he's absolutely lethal in La Liga since, again, start 16-17. So it covers 16-17, some of 17-18, and then his most recent game. 39 games, it's basically similar numbers. 39 games, 39 shots, 11 goals, 28.21 conversion rate, 0.58 per 90. He's got 10 big chances scored in that time, which is the third highest in the league, behind only you-know-who and you-know-who. So he's actually like a really dangerous, really deadly sniper in his game. He had one shot against Osasuna, scored it. Mm. So he's a really, really interesting striker. He provides such an option. And Villarreal, obviously, we all talk about Santi Cazorla, how much we love that and how great that he is. And they've got Ekambi and they've got other really good talent. But they've lacked a sort of ability to punch. He's their record signing, 25 million euros. Their previous record signing, Gerard Moreno, was also a striker of 20 million euros, and he scored 23 times in 70 games, which is not great. And if Alcácer can stay fit, which has always been his thing, he gets picked up, he's picking up injuries. If he can stay fit, they've got themselves a bargain there, and he's going to score loads for them because they're a creative side. Like we've said about Dortmund as well, they're a young, they're not young side, but they're a creative side. They can go forward and play explosively. They just need someone to always be there to finish these chances. And if he can do that, we're going to talk about debut goals. Will's little debut goal theory. He's got that monkey off his back.
It's not really my theory. You know, I can't claim that one.
Will's bonkers idea about scoring early is good for your mentality of how you approach games. However, he came up with that.
He's a really nice guy. He's been
out with him.
He's gonna end his career with one of the coolest career paths.
I mean, Valencia to Barcelona to Dortmund to Villarreal. I mean, yeah, and the thing is, if he plays well for Villarreal, he's young enough that he could probably get a move somewhere else as well. Mm-hmm. Like, he could go back to the elite.
Gerard Moreno, who you mentioned, has been used quite often in the recent Spain squads, hasn't he? So yeah, Villarreal might be contributing two to that, which is something. Three with Santi Cazorla.
I would be amazed if Cazorla doesn't go to the Euros. I mean, maybe Luis Enrique might not pick him, I suppose. Robert Moreno was not picked him, but I would imagine Cazorla will go to the Euros because he's just playing so well, and it's like to have that experience as well. Mm. Have Cazorla and Busquets in your midfield, players that were there for the World Cup, for the Euros. You know, that's invaluable for what is a young,
not a lot of speed
squad.
Though.
No,
you'll
no.
hope they return back to 75% possession with those two in the team. But even then, yeah, Alcácer. It's quite funny because last season, all the tweets and all the analysis we're doing about Haaland's shots, we were actually doing about Alcácer.
Yeah.
He scored with each of his first 10 shots on target, I'm pretty sure, in the Bundesliga when he joined, and then carried that into Spain form. Yeah. So, again, Dortmund have identified people that score at an insanely clinical rate. They've sold one, replaced with someone.
It speaks so highly of Dortmund. I mean, and the job Zorc is doing there, Michael Zorc, is as the general manager, because the way they put their squad together is just phenomenal. And the fact that they can sell Alcacer, bring in Haaland, and just immediately be like, okay, now we're upgraded. Now we're even better. It's like,
and with Alcacer, because it was initially a loan, they activated the option to buy. I think it was around 20 million. They've not even really, they've not made a profit, but they've not made a loss on someone that fired them close to a Bundesliga title. Yeah. Now they'll be hoping their new boy can take them one step further. So we have looked at the most impactful Premier League signings, the most exciting transfers from around Europe, and now we're going to look ahead to what may be the best free agents you can get in the summer, or even now, depending if you've done this task to the letter. In the final bit of fun of the William Hill transfer special, we are doing a Squawker 6 selection of soon-to-be free agents, i.e. people that, according to transfermarkt.com, which thank you so much for that website to be able to do this task, will have a contract expiring either in the summer, or if you thought there was anyone that was worthy of a mention that is already a free agent, you can include them, of course. As always, if you've not listened before, Squawker 6, we pick a six-a-side team, essentially, based on one topic. You get a goalkeeper, you get a centre-back, you get a full-back, considering that's the sexiest position in the world right now. You get a centre midfielder, a winger, or even a wild card forward, and a number nine, a striker. So, without going further into the rules too much more, we'll start straight off. Mo, start with you, goalkeeper.
Claudio Bravo.
Why on earth would you pick someone with a 50% save
because
percentage?
He's got, I want to see what's going to happen. Where's he going to go? Like, he's destroyed his reputation so much at Man City, except for when he grew a beard. That was pretty cool. He's just he came to Barcelona, two great seasons at Barcelona, won the title, won the Copa America, won the title again. It's been awful.
So nothing.
Who's going to sign him?
I don't think anyone will if they've watched any of it. Ollie,
The guy that Bravo replaced, Joe Hart, is also out of contract at Burnley. I completely forgot he existed until he showed up for BBC before the Shrewsbury Liverpool game.
He was quite a good pundit.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's been spending his time refining that because he was
fair enough. He's planning off football.
Exactly. The heir to Gary Lineker, usurping Jermaine Genius's claim. Will, goalkeeper.
So before you led your coup against my initial idea, which was picking free agents currently, I had, as an actual free agent now, Emiliano Viviano. Signed for Arsenal on loan in 2013-14, as you'll probably remember, but never played a competitive game for them. Which was a trick he'd previously pulled off at Inter Milan during the 2011-12 season. But he had six caps for Italy, so he's good enough for my free agent team. For my contract expiring in 2020, I just picked the most valuable one on the list. And I think it was this is the goalkeeper who was in the YouTube video that we posted, which is Walter Benitez.
Yeah, the Nice goalkeeper. Yeah. I had Walter Benitez down, again, based on the fact that he's probably the best goalkeeper available in terms of age and potential of actually signing. Then I thought, poor old John Ruddy. 24 clean sheets in the Championship to get Wolves promoted.
Yeah.
And one assist, by the way, Alisson. And has played two Premier League games since they came up. Obviously, if you're going to sign Portugal's number one, it's a pretty good replacement. But I think John Ruddy still may have a campaign left in him yet. And whether that's back in the Championship and keeping 24 clean sheets, then so be it. But I think he'll be good in my little team.
I only ever think of Luis Suarez when I hear John Ruddy's name, from that time he scored the most ridiculous hat-trick against him.
So maybe John Ruddy needs to return so that other players can score ridiculous hat-tricks against him. We'll whiz back round. Centre-back picks.
Centre-back. I mean, Yamatongan, right? It's like, it's kind of boring, kind of obvious, but
good sell.
Well, no, he's very good, isn't he? And he's,
I think it's crazy that he at 31, 32 years old?
32. Yeah.
I mean, they locked down Alderweireld, didn't
well,
they?
Well, he'll be 33 by the start of next season.
They locked down Alderweireld. Why haven't they locked down Vertonghen? What's
he'll be going
on
to the Premier League's retirement home, also known as Internazionale.
Davinson Sanchez and Tanganga are coming along, so maybe there's no reason to renew him.
Left-footed centre-backs, a rare breed. Worth picking up if you can get him for free.
Yeah, I was going to say Vertonghen as well.
Yeah.
He was on the bench yesterday, so he's starting to get phased out a little bit, and it looks as though he'll be available.
If he can't get in at left back, which is where he was being used initially as well, Tanganga being played there, then...
Well, Tanganga was actually going to be out of contract as well, and they've recently triggered a contract extension for him.
They knew this was coming up. They were like, we don't want him getting touted on the Squawker Talker. Will, so your two picks?
Yeah, contract expired in 2020, on Vertonghen again.
Yeah.
I've gone for Key at centre back.
Yeah.
Reason is he played there. Obviously played in the final in central defence. He's good enough for this year. Also, there's another element to my picks.
Oh my word!
They're all players because we've done a couple. Players you forgot played for Club X.
Yeah.
Recently, we've done articles on this. So, for instance, players you forgot played for Genk. Such as Origi, Thibaut Courtois. The club you might have forgot the key played for is Celtic, won the title with them. Viviano, probably Inter Milan.
People probably thought he played for Arsenal.
And him, full stop.
If he didn't make an appearance for either club, then the ghost goalkeeper. Thiago Silva. Marvin Sordell's most difficult opponent.
I mean,
35 years old is perhaps... it's a risk. Maybe he'll be joining up and playing number 10 with Dani Alves in the Brazil first division, but Thiago Silva, I think, someone that's underrated, but then
he was underrated, he makes mistakes. Then he was overrated, now he's underrated again, if that makes sense.
And then someone that appeared on the transfer market list that I did loads of research for, but then had confirmed seemingly on Twitter that he won't be out of contract, but I need to mention it. Millwall's Jake Cooper, who has played 106 consecutive championship matches, playing every single minute.
There's your Joe DiMaggio.
And 6 goals, 6 assists, left-footed centre-back. I thought he could be the Wolves' next Connor Cody, because obviously Cody had that incredible streak. So I thought left side, put Roman Saiz in midfield if you need to. But it turns out he's not out of contract, so ignore everything I just said. Fullbacks.
Thomas Meunier, Belgian sensation, good World Cup.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think this one's going to be fairly routine.
Yeah, I was going to say that. But then also, Fosu Mensah, I think, is out of contract.
Fosu Mensah.
He was on my list.
Meunier is my contract expiring 2020 pick. But the one you were waiting for, the free agent. Ivan Strinic, who was a regular starter for Croatian Croatia's run to 2018.
Is that the one that I...
I think I went in on him.
He was by far the worst player in that team, by the way.
The club you probably forgot he played for, AC Milan. He signed for them that same summer and then left the following summer without having technically made a competitive appearance. In the intervening period, he was diagnosed with a heart condition, athlete's heart.
So that's probably why he didn't make an appearance.
Well, I think he recovered from it and went back into training.
Because I didn't want to hammer him then for having a heart condition.
No, we're not hammering him anyway. we're encouraging people to sign him.
No, yeah, you are. But I was saying, I recognise the name because I think in the World Cup I said that he was an area England should target, etc. But that didn't end very well. Fullbacks, I picked on him. If Thomas Meunier is available for free, that seems like a pretty good one. Obviously, Levan Kazawa is the other PSG fullback that you could get for three, and is the only defender to score a Champions League hat-trick. So, in a six-a-side team, you maybe want that finishing ability, but Meunier strikes me as a solid wing-back option.
I'd imagine they'll renew him, surely. Well, we don't know.
Well, this is what we don't want to know, because at the moment, he's running out of contract, so he fits. Centre midfielders.
Luka Modric. Come on. Magnificent, one of the best midfielders last 10 years, World Cup winner, Ballon d'Or winner, World Cup finalist, just a sensational. Played the best pass at the club at the Supercopa de España.
Cool, that just goes on everyone's CV.
Well, it wasn't a great tournament, and he played this sensational pass with outside his foot. He's still a pleasure to watch.
And despite us saying that maybe he left it all in Russia.
No, he's back now. Zidane sorted him out. He looks physical. He's not playing every single week, which helps him. He's just
Who knew Zidane was a good manager? Oh, Ollie, quick, say your centre midfielder.
John Lundstrom, although it looks like he's going to get a 12-month trigger to his contract.
You picked him over Modric.
Yeah, just because he's the FPL lord. He's Modric stuff this season.
Modric isn't going to get you any goals and assists directly. Yeah, exactly. No one cares about second passes.
And he's not listed as a defender
I'm joking. Exactly.
Hockey assist.
Otherwise, Marco van Hinkel, remember him? He's at Chelsea. he's out of contract.
I do remember him.
Two solid names.
Modric was my contract expiring in 2020 pick. Yeah. Free agent currently, though, Tom Carroll has just been released. You might have forgotten about him, full stop.
No.
If you're being generous, you've forgotten Spurs wonder kid. Also had a stint at Villa. Tim Sherwood once said he was good enough for Barcelona, which I was reminded of by a really good article on Wales Online explaining why he'd just basically been released as a, as they termed it, a footnote to the Borja Bastón to Aston Villa transfer. But yeah,
Tom Carroll.
He's in midfield for me.
I've gone for Santi Cazorla, who asked if...
Wonderful man.
Yes. We mentioned him earlier, yes. So I won't go too much. But since his Achilles was healed... second most assists in the Liga.
Renew him, I think.
This is what I think. But at the moment, I don't think it's confirmed, so I'll take it. If he's appearing on that transfer market list, he's going in. Second most assists, third most chances created, and sixth most completed through balls, and potentially a Euro 2020 spot in the shop window, Santi Cazorla, for a free transfer.
Back to Arsenal.
Yeah. He dreams of making one final appearance because it ended so sadly with him not making an appearance since 2016. And... just put him and Arteta in midfield together again. That's what we need to see. But anyway, enough nostalgia. Wingers or forwards?
Ryan Fraser. He of the linked to about 50 million different clubs in the summer. Didn't work out. His numbers have dropped off, right? He's only got three assists to 14. No, just really. but he's still creating, whipping the crosses in, creating the chances as frequently as he did last season. His Bournemouth striker situation has gone so bad. His assist numbers are gone, which is the problem for creators. There's a canny club out there waiting to take advantage of him. If Liverpool hadn't gone into the stratosphere, I'd say, Liverpool will sign him and make it really good. Obviously, they're way beyond
but
him now.
He doesn't start that much for Bournemouth.
No, there's still a player there.
I think that's due to the contract, though, isn't it?
He gave a pretty controversial interview before the weekend or just during it, saying he hasn't been...
Yeah, there's a player there waiting for someone to sign and tap into. A lot of creativity.
And you've just signed him for your Squawker 6.
Yes.
Ollie.
Adam Lallana is quite a nice one. Probably going back to Southampton, I'd imagine, or somewhere like that.
It's 2020, Adam Lallana on the wing. Yeah, why not?
Well, we were talking off air, and you said, I think I know who you're going to pick for your central midfield spot. Is Adam Lallana the player you were
referring
to?
No, I thought you were going
to
go for Santi as well, because you quite like his stats. Okay. No. So I misread you completely. So we'll ignore Ollie's Adam Lallana winger pick. It doesn't need any more attention.
So I had this down as winger/attacking midfielder. I've gone for David Silva.
Yeah,
just better. But in terms of the free agents right now, Vladimir Weiss, I can't remember if it's Weiss or Weiss, but he's a player who probably would have been on your radar around Euro 2016, during his Man City days. That's his forgotten club.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've got an article in the FA Cup U final as well that he was in.
The Euro 2016, he became the first player in history to score at the Euros while playing his club football outside Europe. He was with Qatar's Al Gharafa, who scored in Slovakia's 2-1 win over Russia. He also threatened to end his national team manager, according to a Daily Record report I read. And apropos of nothing, called Dele Alli overrated on Twitter. So he gets bonus points for not having a social media account manager running his Twitter.
One of his national team managers was his dad. I'm assuming it wasn't him.
I vaguely remembered his dad was a wrestler, or there being something like that. But I couldn't verify that.
Definitely wasn't.
I think he's called Vladimir Weiss as well.
I couldn't verify that fact. So don't take that as gospel.
So yeah, an interesting character. You'll definitely want to chat to him after the game, after our Squawker 6 tournament. I've put Dries Mertens here, almost out of. You can leave Marek Hamšík with his record, one of the coolest midfielders of our generation. You didn't leave. Chelsea couldn't put the move through. So now you have to sign for my Squawker 6 team, because I think he's 3 goals away from becoming Napoli's all-time top scorer. And at 32 years old, maybe he's not going to get as good a move as he once did. But Mertens' last 3 seasons, 16 goals, 11 assists last season. Season before, 18 goals, 6 assists. And then 28 goals and 9 assists. Has had really good solid seasons, dropped down a bit. But again, as we mentioned, maybe that's to do with some contract talking and the chaos at Napoli. But I thought, in objective ability-wise, probably a good pick.
Yeah.
So the final spot, centre-forwards, strikers,
PSG's all-time top scorer, Edinson Cavani, 198 goals, 293 games, two goals away from becoming the all-time, becoming 200 goals for PSG in all competitions.
Good maths.
Handsome man. Oh, yes, thank you. Handsome man, tall, rangy striker. Reminds you of Serie A in the 90s. If you watch Serie A in the 90s, just...
And it reminds you of Serie A when he was at Napoli.
If you've seen the pictures of everyone around for Neymar's all-white birthday party, he looked outstanding. He's just a great man, great striker. Surprised no one signed him in January. They tried.
Yeah, Atletico Madrid said they were messed about by agents and stuff.
I mean,
and imagine if you'd done a whole video on why he would be perfect for Atletico Madrid, which you can actually still watch because we've switched it. That was with William Hill as well, looking at why Morata and Diego Costa 2.0 at Atletico haven't been that great, and Cavani could be the man to continue the South American tradition of absolutely obscene goal scorers. But you'll have to watch it to find out more. Wally, striker?
Not necessarily a striker, but Josip Iličić is a nice one. He's more of a forward than an actual striker, but I think he counts.
Definitely. He's like their top goal scorer.
Yeah. 14 goals this season.
Yeah, he could have gone in your wild card wing position.
14 goals, 3 assists in 18 games.
Most hat-tricks since
he
joined Atalanta.
Where's number 72, scores free kicks from the halfway line.
Yeah.
What's not to like?
Yeah, I know. Really fun player. And alongside Papu Gomez.
If he makes the right move
he's 32 years old. I don't think
but I mean, if he makes
Sheffield United.
He could have a good swan song.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, if he makes the right move, he could actually give one or two more seasons of actually really good
stay
football.
At Atalanta.
And he used to play for Palermo
next season.
So that's cool. Yeah, there must be an article on that.
Yeah, we've definitely got a Palermo one. Cavani, Carl Lafferty, Belotti, Dybala. Will?
Iličić was my striker / forward.
Yep.
But free agents now, I've given a home to Giuseppe Rossi. Because in football, there's no more noble or tragic archetype than the striker who just does their ACL.
Yeah.
He's done his like 4 or 5 times. So, and a really cool player. Like, he's reminded me a bit of like a sort of Michael Owen type striker. He's like quite short, quick, dribbling, scores loads of goals.
Villarreal let him train with them for quite a long time as well, so he would be match fit, I think.
Oh, yeah, and in terms of clubs you forgot he played for, see if you can guess.
Newcastle
and?
Man United.
Oh, yeah. I thought the Man United was obvious.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It's kind of obvious, but it was also like...
Come on, mate.
You forget. I mean, it's obvious in the same way that Piqué playing for Man United is obvious, but you still forget it.
I went with Edison Cavani because of that, and because I'm tired to it for making a video on him. I was annoyed about Olivier Giroud not leaving because if he went to Spurs, he would have completed the tricolour of Premier League London clubs. Blue, white, red, France flag.
And he had a nice graphic.
We had a really nice graphic, but you're never going to see it.
Thanks.
Maybe.
Thanks, Frank.
Yeah, maybe I can put it on this podcast one because it's worth it.
Join Fulham when they get promoted this season.
Yeah, anyone. Just we need a white-kitted London team to sign Olivier Giroud. And you could.
Brentford. Nah, it won't quite work.
Oh, that's nearly... a French flag on its own. Just need some blue on there. And then the other player that I think in six aside would be lethal, free contract, Obafemi Martins.
Yeah,
is still playing.
He's still going.
He's still playing, and he's got no contract in 6 months. 84 miles an hour rocket against Spurs.
Transported me back to that game.
And on Pro Evo, famously 99 top speed and 99 acceleration, which is the exact stats you need for a real life Squawker six aside free agent team, in my opinion. But that's everything we have time for on this week's Squawker Talker podcast. I hope you enjoyed our full review of the January winter window with William Hill and with Mohamed Butt. Thank you for your Rojo epilogue.
And with Jake Emerson.
Thanks,
Marcos, for everything, mate.
Yeah. Ollie, thank you.
Thanks
mate.
Very much.
Will, thank you for joining us.
No
and
problem.
Thank you for doing the task as you initially as you initially set out.
Twice the work.
Sorry that we're all lazy.
It was a lot of fun.
And it was a lot of fun. We hope you had fun, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Squawker Talker podcast. Thank you.
League Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.